Promotional consideration for Growing Greater Philadelphia provided by Citizens Bank and the General Building Contractors Association.
This is Growing Greater Philadelphia, bringing you the stories of economic growth, job creation, and business success from across the 11-county community of Northern Delaware, Southern New Jersey, and Southeastern Pennsylvania. Now, here's Matt Gabry.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into the next edition of Growing Greater Philadelphia. We're thrilled you're able to join us today. Joining me is WPHT and business radio host Dan Loney.
Matt, as always, great to spend some time with you talking about business.
You know, Dan, one of the amazing things about Greater Philadelphia and the city specifically is how we've evolved over time, this whole spirit of innovation that was planted back at the founding of our country.
It really doesn't matter where you go, whether it be the city, whether it be over in New Jersey, down into Delaware, the suburbs, you're going to find examples of that throughout the region.
That's right. You know, one of my favorite fun facts about Greater Philadelphia is all the first medical school, the first school of pharmacy. In fact, in Delaware, the Star Campus at the University of Delaware, they're continuing to launch new initiatives.
And then when you think here in Philadelphia, a lot of people talk about the Navy Yard and all the new business and all the new buildings that are going on in that area.
The Navy Yard, it's a real transformation. I think they're celebrating 20 years, maybe it's 22 years of existence now in being this business park that is really dynamic.
And an amazing innovation is what's going on at Rowan University with the new tech center over there as well.
Yeah, that's a really good one, Dan, and it complements not only what's happening at the University City Science Center, but there are other life science centers as well out in Bucks County and in Chester County. So this evolution of where we've come from and where we're going, it all starts right here, and our region is really known for not only honoring our innovative history, but continuing that incredible modernization that we see happening here today.
And this week, we're going to take a look at two very different companies. First, we're going to introduce you to a really creative young man working with his hands, using, of all things, a vintage sewing machine to make his products. Then we're going to reveal how cutting-edge technology, such as things like virtual reality, is used by software developers to help shape the future of things like medicine, art, and believe it or not, even politics.
So you know that eureka moment that people experience? The one for Archimedes, that one was about the displacement of water and volume and how they connected with each other. Well, our first story today, that eureka moment is a little less lofty and a little less flattering.
And I said, look, honey, it's a poop holder. And she just thought, oh God, not again.
So Todd Anderson's eureka moment, well, let's just say that one was a little bit more pet related. But for some people, serial inventing is really part of who they are.
Here we go, down the road, he's got another invention. What are you going to do now, call the patent office? I said, maybe, you never know.
That's the beauty of great innovation. You know, some people can look at the same product that you or I have looked at for decades, and they see something completely new and different. Well, this story, it's very similar to that. It had a simple start. Todd Anderson, founder of GearTac Systems, he loaded his sons into the car and they headed off to the local SPCA. And they had a very simple mission to get a new family pet, in this case, a dog. And they also had one little stipulation.
My wife said, whatever you do, do not bring home a pit bull. And I didn't understand why she had said that. I mean, there is a stigma attached to the breed, unfortunately. And in the back of my mind, I said, well, that's all I want. I want a big bulldog. I want the biggest, blackest, darkest, meanest bulldog I can get. You know, so that was always what was in the back of my mind. So we set off to the SPCA, and I knew what I wanted. And the kids had no idea. They were just like, cool, we're going to get a dog. And my wife told me, don't bring home a pit bull. And we arrived at the SPCA, I walked in, and I told them exactly what I want. I wanted a puppy. I wanted to start young. Well, the two young ladies that were there, God bless them. One of them I actually still speak to this day. She said, look, we've got one black bulldog here, and she's an American bulldog Amstaff mix, and she's older. She's not a puppy. She's really cute, though. And I thought, no, cute is not where I'm going with this. And she said, oh, you have to meet her. You have to meet her. And I said, no, I want a big, black, scary puppy. You know, I want to raise the puppy up, take him to the gym. And she said, please, just meet Denise. And I thought, Denise?
Right.
Oh my goodness, you must be crazy here. So Megan was a sweetheart, so I thought, I'm going to humor her. I'm going to go into this room and meet this dog with my kids, and she brings this dirty, skinny black bulldog in who is afraid of her shadow, and
you fell in love.
I did. I at first glance, I'm like, no. But then she like looked at me with this, they call it the pity smile. And that was it. It just, that from that moment forward, it was 10 seconds. We took a picture of the, we call her our puppy. She's not a puppy. She's almost four now. And sent it to my wife. And she was going bananas. Like, it's a pit bull. Oh my God, it's an American bulldog. And no, what are you talking about? You're crazy. You're just looking, right? You're just looking.
Right. The one thing I ask you not to get, yeah. You're coming home with.
And we were already on our way home with her. You know, we fell in love with her. I mean, it took seconds.
In addition to our chat with Todd, we also got a chance to meet his muse. That's Darby. And walking Darby every day gave him the perfect opportunity to find inspiration.
So now we are walking this dog every day. Over the next couple weeks, he's now, actually probably the next couple months, he's up to 85 pounds. She's back to a healthy weight. She's a big dog. She's a beast. Her collar falls off of her head. Her neck is so thick. So we have to harness her. The beautiful thing is I'm walking every day. And I'm putting her poop in this design, this pouch I made. So I decided to take it to the next level. People have admired it. People have said, wow, you're not holding poop anymore. And then I decided, okay, let me see if... I'm not doing anything else right now. Let me see if this is a marketable idea. Let me now get my pen and pencil out, get my Excel spreadsheet out. Let me price this. Let me make it tangible for retail sale. That process changed the design greatly. We realized we had way too much material, way too much in the product, and it was not going to be retailable at that price point. So we went through a complete design modification of the pouch. We had two pouches. We had the pouch with the bags and then the pouch to put the poop in when we were done. Too many costs. My mantra was made in the USA, high quality materials. It was going to cost a fortune. So I went into another deep depressive slump and thought, oh man, I thought I was going to something. It's not going to work. Woke up the next morning and thought, well, let's just do it out of one pouch that basically has an in and an out. Basically, the pouch now is a coin purse with a bottom slit to pull the bag out, scoop the poop, and you put it in the top. That simple. There's the GearTag K9. Now we've got a cool kind of functional... It came together. You know, it went from crude to very functional and almost fashionable. I mean, you got to remember, this thing looks like Batman's utility belt that you wear over your shoulder. And I said to the wife, let's go up to French Creek State Park and take a bunch of pictures of this thing. Never have I connected a dog to it. That's the end game of this story. It was just a poop sling, for lack of better terms. And we go to the park and we're fumbling around with cameras and shirts, and my wife's wearing black, but the device is black. I'm like, you can't, you got to wear gray. You know, we're having a typical marital conversation in the middle of the woods. And I said, do me a favor, put on the poop sling, clip the leash, tie your leash around the bottom of this thing, and let the dog just sit there for a second so we can get you ready to photograph. And after 10 minutes of doing this, I realized my dog, Darby, she just sat there looking at us, calm, collective, not nervous. And she's a little anxiety-ridden at this stage still with us. She's new with this. She doesn't like the leash so much. And she would like to get away from the leash a lot of times.
And she's on camera.
And she's on camera. Right. So there's a lot of issues with that with most canines. And here she is now sitting on her foot, looking back, relaxed. My wife's able to use both her hands. She's answering her phone. She's changing her shirt. She's, you know, moving the poop sling around and getting it perfect to photograph. And it just hit me. Like, wait a second. I've never heard of anything in the world to walk your dog that you don't use your hands. And there it was, the GearTech K9. It was just born right then and there. So it was like a double process. First, it was all about waste management. And then it turned into, this is a hands-free dog walking device.
Todd's workspace is a home studio. In the basement of their Montgomery County home, right next to the TV and the couch for the kids, are tools of the trade that adorn the walls. And on the tables, well, they're filled with projects that are in various stages. And at the center of all this sits Todd's pride and joy.
It's a 1931 World War II Singer. But it's the best machine because I'm only doing box stitching. No running seams. So I don't need a motor on this machine. I don't need speed. I don't need speed. I need to be able to turn 8 times to do a box stitch.
You're headquartered in Montgomery County. You're doing manufacturing in central Pennsylvania area, Lehigh Valley, Wilkes-Barre area with a nice group of folks who kind of can deliver what you need in a very cost-efficient way.
Yes.
How's distribution? How's the growth of the business been over the past 18 months or so?
To me, I think it's been amazing. I'm not used to this, so it's new to me. We've sold over 2,000 units.
That's great. Congratulations.
Just by hand. Just by word of mouth and trade shows. I'm not going to lie to you. The website's a tough thing. It's really hard to search for something that doesn't exist in people's minds. I'm not paying a big marketing company to do fancy SEO for me because it's not going to get me anywhere. Because you can't search for something that doesn't exist. And this is basically that product. So I have to go grassroots to the people with it. And that's what I've done. And in that... It's been less than a year and a half on the road. I do a trade show about every 2 weeks, so every other weekend. And like I said, we're right around the 2,000 mark of sales. And I'm like, wow, I think that's pretty good. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but for me, that's a lot. I mean, I've made every one of these, don't forget. I mean, like you had said, Matt, I make these in my basement. I'm very, very fortunate that the design of the product allows me to manufacture it without a lot of big equipment. The equipment necessities are minimal. It's very laborious. It's a labor intensive. It's a labor of love. So I'm able to put it together with people, with family. That's mm-hmm. who helps me. My father, my wife, my kids, my mother, my father-in-law. These are my employees. They hate me. They don't get paid. They just work weekends and they work late nights. But we were able to do this on our own in our basement. Unfortunately, we have outgrown our basement. And like you said, we have had to solicit the manufacturing in Wilkes-Barre, PA.
And that's not a bad thing.
No. The company, I found this company named A. Rifkin and a lady by the name of Jamie Durkin. They are 125 years old. They've been around. They make deposit bags for banks. They're perfect. I love them. They're just, every employee's been there like 30, 40 years. And,
it comes back to your family roots and your passion for being part of an entrepreneurial kind of community, both in your previous professional career and now in your current professional career.
Yeah.
So it's a nice fit, it sounds like.
It is. It's beautiful. I mean, my business model, my mantra is if I can't look at you face to face and have a conversation with you as a one-on-one, human to human, it's not going to work.
So it was really a blast to talk with Todd. And as with all of our interviews, it's posted now online at 1210wpht.com/select.
Matt, I'm going to tell you, with as many people that are pet owners in the greater Philadelphia region, these ideas are going to be fantastic and are going to catch on like fire.
I think Todd's on to something. And one of the things I really love about this interview that we did with Todd, he's a creative guy.
Yeah.
He was at a crossroads, and he invested and poured his energy into something he really cared about, and now he's seeing really great success.
And coming up next, reality is what you make of it, and that's especially true for one breakout Bucks County business.
Distribution costs, workforce talent, ability to recruit, cost of living, quality of life. Greater Philadelphia has an advantage when considering key business factors. Find out why Northern Delaware, Southern New Jersey, and Southeastern Pennsylvania, the perfect place to establish and grow a business. Visit selectgreaterphl.com and tune in to the Growing Greater Philadelphia podcast on radio.com.
This is a citizen's perspective on planning for retirement, also known as the five stages of grief, presented by me, Tony Goes, Premier Relationship Manager at Citizens Bank. When it comes to helping my clients, like Dave here, plan for retirement, I get this a lot. First comes denial.
Not worried. Definitely not worried. I've got plenty of time and money.
Then anger.
What was I thinking? Why didn't I start saving more years ago?
Then fear.
What am I going to do now? This is bad, right? Right?
Then comes bargaining.
Okay, how about this? Here's an idea. What if I start saving more next year?
Then finally, acceptance.
Maybe we should get started.
I can help take the grief out of planning for retirement. Ask me, Tony Goes, how a Citizens Retirement Checkup can help you reach your potential.
Citizens Bank is a brand name of Citizens Bank N.A. and Citizens Bank of Pennsylvania, member FDIC. Citizens Bank Wealth Management is comprised of both bank and brokerage-affiliated companies.
Independence Blue Cross, a proud sponsor of the Select Greater Philadelphia Council. Independence Blue Cross is the largest health insurer of the Philadelphia region, serving more than 2.5 million people locally and 8.5 million people in 23 states and Washington, D.C. Learn more about Independence Blue Cross at ibx.com.
This segment of Growing Greater Philadelphia is brought to you by Drexel University. Drexel University was founded in 1891 and is one of the region's top 10 private employers, with three campuses in Philadelphia. Learn more about Drexel University at drexel.edu or call 215-895-2000.
Stradley Ronan's more than 200 attorneys represent private and public companies in everything from sophisticated corporate transactions to complex litigation. Learn more about Stradley Ronan at stradley.com or call 215-564-8000.
Liberty Property Trust, a national firm with Philadelphia roots, is one of the nation's largest commercial real estate companies, owning 100 million square feet of industrial and office space. Learn more about Liberty at libertyproperty.com.
From the city to the suburbs, our region is thriving and transforming. Businesses are getting bigger and better. Hear all about it here. This is Growing Greater Philadelphia.
You know, Dan, the evolution of technology today, it's happening so fast. It can be inspiring and paralyzing all at the same time. For example, do you happen to know the difference between augmented reality compared with virtual reality?
No, not really.
Well, I don't either.
Okay.
I don't totally understand all that. But, you know, one Bucks County firm, they've made it their entire business.
Okay, let's see if Ded Anson, president and founder of Brick Simple, can help us understand the next big thing in tech, beginning with how important timing was to the start of his business.
Well, Brick Simple is a company that I started back in 2002, which I call a great year to do a technology startup. We had the dot-com implosion, and for me, I looked at it as an opportunity to start something new, build something new. And there's also 40% of the people who worked in information technology were unemployed after the dot-com implosion. So there's lots of resources, lots of talent, and I wanted to make an investment in building a new company that did exciting things. And we've been trucking along now where it's technically our 16th year as a company, and maintain that nimbleness, that entrepreneurial spirit we had from the beginning to do innovative technology work.
And tell us a little bit more about the niche, if there is such a thing that you would say you and your team focus on at Brick Simple.
We really focus on innovative and cutting-edge technologies, be it virtual reality, augmented reality, the Internet of Things, blockchain, AI, the intersection of all those different pieces. So really, as a firm, we're quite unique in the kind of scope of work that we do. The majority of the work that we do is either working on our own products or helping clients develop their products.
Is there a project or a product that you've worked on over your career that really stands out for you as one that is extra special that you're proud to tell around the kitchen table when someone says, hey, Ded, what are you working on these days?
There's a bunch of them. We're very lucky in that way. The one that comes to mind, just because as a person who's an engineer by education, technologist, we did a project with artist David DeTuna. That was a collaboration with the artist. So we combined Google Glass, which was popular at the time, and his artwork to create an interactive art piece that was unveiled at Art Basel in Miami. We went on to do Lincoln Center, which is something as an engineer I never thought I'd be able to say. We did Lincoln Center. But then we also took that to the Smithsonian National Portrait Gallery, and we broke a 38-year attendance record with that piece and having people interact with it. So it was use of technology to communicate a lot of values of Americana, tied that all together into an interactive experience that was at the Smithsonian. That work was turned into an award-winning documentary which I tell my young guys, not every project you work on will be turned into an award-winning documentary. But I was really, really proud of that. And I think what it did, it showed off the kinds of things we can do. And today we're doing everything from CPR and virtual reality to helping workers to helping build better mousetraps.
I did want to ask you a little bit more about Brick VR and Brick Internet of Things.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about Brick VR.
Well, Brick Simple, we have a few different practice areas. We have a practice area for artificial intelligence, a practice area for the Internet of Things, and Brick VR is our practice area for doing virtual reality training experiences. One of the higher profile training experiences we did here in the Philadelphia area was working with the University of Pennsylvania Center for Resuscitation Science, where we actually did one of the first CPR training experiences in virtual reality. So that when you see someone collapse in the virtual reality experience and you put your hands down, you have your hands down on a Laerdal mannequin, you're able to do compressions, you're able to see that experience, and it's much more effective than being just in a classroom, fluorescent lighting. You're on a street scene, you see people around you reacting, you're asking people for help, and it makes it very immediate. And we've been working on other training experiences, everything from hand washing to configuring surgical centers. Leveraging this kind of virtual reality experience for something, it does something more. It's allowing you to do something that would be otherwise dangerous in real life or too expensive to perform. Being able to do that in a virtual experience is really powerful. And I think a lot of virtual reality companies are looking at this as being some amazing new entertainment experience. And the reality is, yes, you can do amazing entertainment experiences, and the market is only so large for that. But if you can do experiences that help nurses do their jobs better, if you can create experiences that will, you know, either make a patient more comfortable, those kinds of experiences, be it in healthcare and medicine or in industrial circumstance where we've done training tools to teach people how to assemble parts and equipment and materials, those things are very effective, and they're very effective now. When everyone has a VR headset at home, I'm certain the entertainment use cases will be more profitable, more you can build more of a business around it. But when you look at the enterprise right now and their value that they get out of this technology, there's a hunger for it. We go to enterprise customers where they've already set up virtual reality training areas. It's something that's already begun, and they want the content that they can leverage this technology to have an impact on how their workers work, the quality of work that they produce, and that they do that work more safely.
The Internet of Things, or IoT. Well, those are phrases that some of us may have heard about recently, and we're likely to hear more and more of those in the years to come. It describes all the devices that we own and the memory that each of those devices has. Some people believe that it's the technology that will ultimately replace the cloud, and for sure, it's also going to disrupt business as usual for almost every company. Det Anson explains how his business is preparing for that specific transition.
It's interesting for the Internet of Things. There was a lot of talk and buzz like, IT, IoT is going to be everywhere. And what's happened is it's become quietly everywhere and very important. I'll give you an example. One of our clients that we do product development for is called InvisAlert. And they have a product called ObserveSmart that uses Bluetooth worn wristbands. The hardware for the wristband was designed by Bressler Group right here in Philadelphia. Brick Simple is the software there and the software running on these iPads in the cloud. What this solution allows you to do is allow someone who's watching behavioral health patients to check in and make sure that they're okay, and not just relying on a clipboard or paper notes to do so, but using the IoT wristband, using the iPad, using a secure HIPAA-compliant cloud with all their healthcare information, be able to make sure that these people are safe. And this is an application that's literally saved lives. It's deployed at some of the most significant behavioral health institutions across the country, and is born right here in Philadelphia.
Det Anson, you've had a really interesting background. You've had the chance to work in, I guess, as a volunteer on some government projects as well in the Obama administration. Do I have that right?
I was a member of the White House Business Council under the Obama administration, and I got to provide some great feedback and see how those things work in Washington, D.C.
That's very cool. How did that come about? How did that opportunity present itself?
Well, part of it is that for me, I have one of the horrible hobbies that I have is I was an elected official. So for a dozen years, I was the county council in Doylestown Borough and also was council president for 10 of those 12 years. And in doing that, I had a series of legislative priorities, some very progressive things, things we could do better in government that I really, as someone in the outside world, I'm a business person. So I thought, how can we improve this? And I think often we have this kind of mantra, how can business people go improve government? And some of the work that I had done there was really very visible. It was visible statewide. We got some national visibility. And that's what prompted initial invitation down to the White House. And I told friends, hey, I want to give my feedback and speak my mind. And after I spoke my mind at the first visit, I told them I will never be invited back again. And sure enough, 3 weeks later, I was back down there.
You must have done something right.
Well, I think it's important that people are looking for voice to be brought to government. I mean, it's one thing to say, okay, everything's great, everything's awesome. But if you're going in and want to approach how you improve these things, and some of the things that we had talked about as a business council, when the president had given the State of the Union 1 year, we just saw, like, checking off the list, everything that we had discussed made it into that State of the Union. And that's because the alignment of what we saw in the business community, we got some of that out of the administration. And that's something where I think it's very easy for people to be cynical about government and ways you interact, and it's very easy to apply labels and characters. But at the end of the day, you want government to be doing these things that can support good things in the economy, support the entrepreneurial spirit. And that's something that's still really uniquely American. And I think that, you know, we need to bring voice to that. And I saw it as an opportunity for me to bring voice from my own experiences to do that in government.
When you meet folks, you referenced, you know, your team at Brick Simple is thrilled to have an office in Cambridge, Massachusetts, in Mountain View, California. Do you have other offices, by the way?
We're right now San Francisco, Philadelphia, Cambridge, and Doylestown. So those are the four offices right now.
Excellent. When you're talking with peers, colleagues in other parts of the country, other parts of the world, whether it's Massachusetts or California or elsewhere, and they discover that corporate headquarters for Brick Simple is actually in the greater Philadelphia region.
Yes.
What do you say to them about why that is?
Folks who are savvy recognize it right away. We've got a great talent pool here. We have a great right kind of cost of living. We have access to the key markets that are necessary. What I find interesting is we've interviewed people out in California who've wanted to relocate so they can be in Doylestown or Philadelphia. And we have a couple folks starting in that regard. One of them is relocating. They're out in Redmond, Washington, working for another large technology company out there. They relocated to Doylestown. And I think part of that is that when you have a place that, hey, you're willing to move, if you lived in San Francisco and you're willing to relocate to Doylestown, even though we have an office out in San Francisco, I think that says a lot about the Philadelphia region and what it is in terms of an asset for people. And they see just quality of life, the kinds of access to opportunities here. I think it's something very compelling to them.
Running a tech company and with offices in San Francisco and Bucks County, this interview was fascinating. And by the way, you can listen to all of our interviews. They're posted online right now at 1210wphd.com/select.
Growing Greater Philadelphia is presented by Select Greater Philadelphia. We're a council of the Chamber of Commerce for Greater Philadelphia. And we're the business attraction organization for Northern Delaware, Southern New Jersey, and Southeastern Pennsylvania. We work to grow the economic vibrancy of our collective community by attracting new businesses and new jobs to our neighborhood. Special thanks to program producers Elena Karmazin and Maricela Juarez, and writer Samara Grizel, and our researcher Steve Boucher. Learn more at selectgreaterphl.com and tune in to our podcast at 1210wphd.com/select.
This segment of Growing Greater Philadelphia is brought to you by Wells Fargo, a proud sponsor of Select Greater Philadelphia Council. Wells Fargo is a diversified, community-based financial services company with a strong vision of satisfying the financial needs of their customers and helping them succeed financially. Wells Fargo provides banking, mortgage, investments, consumer, and commercial financial services. Learn more at wellsfargo.com or call 1-800-869-3557. Copyright 2018 Wells Fargo Bank N.A. All rights reserved. Member FDIC.
Development projects are revitalizing the future of Greater Philadelphia's neighborhoods, towns, and cities. And you can learn more when you join the Select Greater Philadelphia team at their annual program, Breaking Ground, Projects Transforming Greater Philadelphia. This dynamic gathering offers an exclusive look at projects across Delaware, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania that will flourish well after the ribbons have been cut. Join them Thursday, May 31st, 2018 from 8 to 10:30 a.m. at Rowan University in Glassboro. Register today at SelectGreaterPhil.com.
DHL.com/events.
More than 25 Fortune 500 companies call Greater Philadelphia home. For more information about businesses growing in northern Delaware, southern New Jersey, and southeastern Pennsylvania, visit SelectGreaterPHL.com.